Welcome to HorrorFatale.com, almost live, where sarcasm goes to the movies and snark watches TV, with your hosts, the Horror Fatale and the Diva Mummy.
Welcome to HorrorFatale.com, almost live. I am your host, the Fatale, and I'm back for another cheery episode of the podcast. And one of these days, I'm going to actually get around to having my friend re-record that intro for me. Doesn't he have such a wonderful radio voice? Anyway, so I know I missed last week, and I know I promised that I would be more frequent with the podcast. I didn't get a chance to. A lot going on this week in my day job, so I didn't get around to it. But anyway, I'm here this week nonetheless to bring you more tidings from the horror world. And unfortunately, we lost a horror icon in the late Sid Haig, who passed away, I think it was Monday. And we didn't find out until, I think, Tuesday. But I'm going to do my first in memoriam to him because I found out a lot of things that I didn't know about him. I was familiar with him, but I hadn't done a lot of back research. I just really, really was focused on his late work that we all know. So I'll get to that at the end of the show. So rest in peace, Mr. Haig. Also, I want to get to a couple of things. I want to talk about Room 104 and Season 2 of Hulu's Into the Dark and a couple other things. So let's just get started, shall we? As you know, Season 3 of HBO's Room 104 is currently airing. And tonight, because it is Friday, the third episode called Itchy will premiere. And I spoke about Itchy before, and I want you guys to really watch it. I don't know if you watched the first episode like I told you to, but this episode is very interesting because there's a really good twist at the end. And this one to me is more of a the whole kind of show is kind of Twilight Zone-y, but this one has more of what we would call in the horror world like a supernatural vibe, or does it? So you have to watch all the way through to the end because you'll be very intrigued. Now, I also want to warn you, those of you who have queasy stomachs or whatever, it's a bit on the gross side because, as the title implies, it is called Itchy, and he's itchy and scratching and rashy for a reason. And all that's revealed at the end of the episode. And it was very unexpected. So I always like that kind of stuff when they ended it unexpected, because the ending came from nowhere. And so I would tell you to watch it because you will thoroughly be shocked at the end. So well done on episode 3, Itchy for Room 104. Also, we have the trailer on HorrorFatale.com that was posted today for the upcoming Season 2 of Hulu's Into the Dark. And if you haven't heard of the show, you should. If you have Hulu, you should definitely watch it. What it is, it's 12 episodes each year, and each episode represents a holiday. And so last month we ended with Pure. I talked about it on the previous podcast and did a review on the site, which I will do for this season as well. It comes on October the 4th for Halloween. So they're beginning it just the way they began season 1 last year, which was The Body. And this one is called Uncanny Annie. Very cute. And I think you're going to like it. I will play the trailer next episode, and we'll have a review on the site. Actually, the trailer will be on the site today. And next time we meet, we'll discuss it more thoroughly because it'll be debuting that day. But you should check it out because it's very, very cool. Let's see, what else do I want to make sure you guys know about? Okay, I'm being a complete and total bimbo right now. Can we talk about Shudder's Creepshow? By the time this is posted today, which is Friday, it's so hard to remember that I'm recording for a day ahead. Anyway, it actually debuted on Thursday on Shudder, on Creepshow TV is what they're calling it, and it was great. What a way to begin a season, which looks like it's going to be so good, you guys. And I hope that you have a Shudder subscription. And if you don't have one, you should get at least the trial. So check out this show for 30 days, I think the trial is. But either way, you will not regret it. And you'll probably go back for more. You can also go to horrorfortale.com and read the complete recap. But it's so good. The first episode aired, and it's based on the, you know, the movies from back in the day. It's so weird calling the 80s back in the day, but it is back in the day. I think 82 and maybe 86 that those two films aired, which is based on, you know, Stephen King's great writing again. And in the first episode, we get to my favorite was the second episode, and I don't want to spoil you in case you haven't watched it, because I do want you to actually watch the show. But if you read the reviews, I don't do a whole lot. I try not to do a whole lot of spoiling for reviews of things. But the first episode was so spot on. They were really able to capture the feeling from the original films, which I was very hesitant about. I was like, are they gonna be able to do this in a way? Because sometimes people mess things up. But it's from Greg Nicotero, who was, if you remember that name, you should, because he was the executive producer of The Walking Dead. And I say was, because I do think I stopped watching The Walking Dead about two seasons ago. I think once Rick left, I left too. So I have no idea what's going on with that show anymore. But anyway, they do two vignettes an episode, and they're the two here was Grey Matter and The House of the Head. Now, Grey Matter was really good because, again, not to spoil you, but it reached back. And I want you to definitely pay attention to that episode. I mean, that part of the episode, because there are so many callbacks. And my favorite one was they go into a sheriff station, and they pan on a bulletin board. Like, you know, sheriff stations have bulletin boards or whatever, wanted posters and that kind of thing. And they had a bulletin board with a missing poster for Cujo. I was so excited about that. I don't know why, but I was really excited about that. But they did a really good job of doing what they do with Stephen King's, you know, his Castle Rock King Dimensions, where the town is Castle Rock, or they talk about the different parts of Maine from his different books. And they did all that. And in the episode has some heavyweights. Tobin Bell's in it from Saw, and Giancarlo Esposito from Better Call Saul. I think he was in Breaking Bad as well, by the way. And Adrienne Barbeau, who is like the Fog. And she has also one of the most memorable characters from the original Creepshow movie. So it was good to see her, them bring her back and let her, get her act on inside of this one. Now, one more time. My favorite part of the episode was the House of the Dead. And it's all about this little girl, Evie, who gets this dollhouse. And let me tell you, some shenanigans go on with that dollhouse. It was really good. It was really creepy. It was so good. It was one of those episodes where at the end, I want to know more. I really, really do. Now I want to know how, where, where did this dollhouse come from? What's the deal? And I guarantee you, you will feel the same way. And to me, when you walk away thinking about something that you've seen and you're like, what did I see? What did I learn? What do I need to learn? I think that's success. So they've done a really good job with this. Well done, Shudder. And it looks like, well, it is. They will be dropping a new episode every Friday, I think for 10 weeks. Don't quote me on that. I had the press release, but I don't have it in front of me. And my memory is not so good today. But check it out. Okay. Now we have to get down to American Horror Story 1984, which is currently airing right now on FX every Wednesday. And if, again, if you go to horrorfatale.com, I have an amazing recap of the first episode. And actually, we're on episode 2 with them. But I haven't posted the recap for episode 2. Tell you guys, you would not believe all the stuff that I have to do in my day job right now. So I haven't had time to devote to the site like I need to. But, because I'm running it by myself again, which is very sad. But anyway, the first episode, let me tell you, Jason and Michael will be proud. Because it literally started off. It kicked off with a summer camp slaughter. And there was an appearance by Richard Ramirez. Which I thought, okay, so we're bringing Richard Ramirez. Okay. And the episode, it was just really good. It had kind of everything. It had the cheesy 80s clothes, music. It was a funny color that reminded you of all the 80s movies. They were doing some weird inflection with their voices. Like, everybody has a deep voice. Now, I don't know what that's about. I was alive in the 80s. I was a child, but I was alive. And I don't really remember everybody speaking that way. But it has to be different reason. I started to Google because I didn't understand what was going on. But that was going on. And so we're introduced to all the characters, and I'm still not invested enough in any of them to care who dies. All of them can die. It'll be funny to watch. But the main character after episode 2, I'm not so sure. The villain is Mr. Jingles. And at first, when she first saw, they told the name, I was like, well, that's a stupid name. That's dumb. But there's a reason for it. Apparently he jingles his keys while he's slaughtering you, or you can hear the keys jingling, because he apparently was a janitor at the camp, and he came back from Vietnam with a thirst for killing. So of course, working at a summer camp, that's the perfect job for him. But you're not supposed to think about that kind of stuff. But he slaughtered everybody at the beginning of the show, gets into a mental institution a la Michael Myers, and he breaks out a la Michael Myers. And also, it's set in, 84 Los Angeles, and they had an actual real life nut job wackadoo running around killing people in The Night Stalker. The Richard Ramirez serial killer. And so they bring him in. Emma Roberts' character is attacked by him. So she decides to go with all the rest of the kids. Well, they're not kids. They're young adults to this summer camp, Summerwood, to become a camp counselor, because that always works out. I love how in these movies no one has seen a horror movie. I love that kind of stuff. I love the meta of it all. It's awesome. And so, again, don't want to spoil you on that first episode in case you haven't seen it and you're planning on binge watching. But shenanigans ensue, of course, because it's the middle of the woods and a homicidal maniac's running around. In episode two, now episode two, which aired, like I said, Wednesday, got a little freaky and a little weird. And it was kind of like, okay, I'm not sure what's going on. They have a character running around that were introduced in the first episode, and he mysteriously wasn't in the rest of the episode anymore, but he shows up in episode two, and he has a really funky, weird backstory. And again, don't want to spoil you, but you know, there'll be more in my recap about my theories. And if you have theories, drop down in the comments on Instagram or Twitter or however you talk to people, because I would like to know your theories about this guy as well. And also about the other characters, because I feel like we're being red herring, which I always like. But nonetheless, Richard Ramirez shows up in the cabin, I mean, in the woods out at the camp. And yeah, I'm not sure how Richard Ramirez would have known that she was going to the camp and how she would have gotten there, how he would have gotten there or whatever. I don't remember anything from what I've read about the Night Stalker about him, you know. Well, he did travel from, he did some murders in San Francisco as well as LA, so I don't know. But they bring him in and as well, so it's like two killers running in the woods, Mr. Shingles running around the woods, and Richard Ramirez. Yeah, so okay, we'll see how that works out. I was tweeting with it, and one of the people on Twitter was like, is this gonna be a Freddy versus Jason thing? And I'm like, maybe that's what they're setting up. It's very strange, kind of, but it was very interesting to watch. So that's American Horror Story, my take on it. Now, this brings me to another show that I think you guys really should watch. I know you're like, damn, this bitch, all she does is watch fucking TV. Yeah, that might be what's going on. But anyway, this one is currently being able to be streamed on Netflix, and it's called Marianne. I tried to do a French accent. I can't do a French accent, so my southernness won't let me. But anyway, that is airing, like I said, it's streaming right now on Netflix. And what it is a author. She's a horror author. Her name is Emma. You guys, my puppy just jumped in my lap. Okay, so the show again is called Marianne, and it's about a French horror writer who has written a series of books, and she's forced really to return to her hometown in the countryside of France. Seriously, guys, this puppy really, really wants to be a part of the cast. You want to say something? You want to bark? No? I mean, yeah, okay. So she's forced to return to her hometown or whatever because, you know, this crazy woman kills herself at one of her book signings and, you know, basically is like, you better get back and check on your parents or whatever, you know, letting her know that something may have happened to her parents. So we follow her and her assistant back to her hometown, which apparently she hasn't been to in like 15 years. And again, don't want to spoil you, but do want to intrigue you so you can go give it a watch. This was basically, to me, a French version of It, kind of. And by that I mean, it has a very Losers Club vibe to it. Because she goes back to her hometown and reconnects with all her friends that she hasn't seen in 15 years. And I think they actually call themselves like the Shipwreck Kids or something, because they spend a lot of time, their teenage years, hanging around this a shipwreck, like this little abandoned boat that's on a pier. Beautiful place too, by the way. Check out the scenery or whatever. I'm like, dang, I really do need to go to France. Anyhow, but they're kind of like the town's misfits or whatever. And so that was very reminiscent of the Losers Club. And instead of, you know, banding together to take down Pennywise, they are taking down Marianne, who is a really fucked up homicidal witch. And I like the way they kind of went back and forth a little bit. Like, we got to see why certain things happen. And a lot of it is written in her books that she's written. And it's like, well, why is this coming true? I liked all the characters, and I think you will too. The lead, I cannot pronounce her name. It is French. But her character's name is Emma, and she is extremely flawed as a lead character. Her whole personality is just shitty, and you kind of want to smack her, but there's something about the way the actress portrays her where you actually feel bad for her, and you're pulling for her to pull this off. And so I thought that was a really good turn by making her, like I said, extremely flawed. Extremely flawed. She has some serious problems. She's kind of an alcoholic. And it's just like, girl, you a mess. But she goes through a lot in this battle. It's only like 8 episodes, because it's, again, it's European. And, you know, they get their shit on over with. They don't do like us, where we drag out stuff for 13, 14 episodes. They're like, nah. Let's tell this story and let's get it over with. The pacing of each episode is pretty good. Now, the people were tweeting about it, how they couldn't sleep and all that kind of stuff. I don't know about all that, because I slept fine. I'm, you know, we're weird cases because we're horror fans. But I slept just good. I don't know. But, you know, the imagery is gorgeous. It's very macabre, you know. They did really well with it. It has a lot of heart. I saw Stephen King actually watched it, and he tweeted about it, and a couple of other people that I follow on Twitter also were tweeting about it. So I would encourage you, if you have Netflix, to check it out. And if you don't have Netflix, get a trial and check it out. Come on, man. You're going to have to get some of these services, I'm telling you, you guys, because they're actually killing it. They're killing it with, you know, way better than network TV. And it's kind of sad, but it's the truth. But that's Marianne on Netflix. Check it out.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are about to enter a world of darkness. A world where life and death are meaningless and pain is God.
Woo! Hey, Billy, let's go.
Yeah.
On your right, you will see the infamous Albert Fish. Masochist, sadist, child killer, most importantly, cannibal. Was Fish, born 1870 and enjoyed spankings with nail-studded paddles and stuffing needles deep into his groin.
Yeah, I have a question. How many nails...
Hold all questions. Now, one of our most famous crazies, the psycho Bainsfield, Mr. Ed Gein. Murderer, cannibal, Mr. Gein used to take great pleasure in playing with the dead bodies of women. Especially their sexual organs.
Now, one of our local heroes, Esquinton Quail, aka Dr. Satan. Holy shit! Murderer, torturer, but most of all, master surgeon. Mr. Quail was an intern at Willows County Mental Hospital. Nicknamed Weeping Willows for the never-ending cries of pain. Through primitive brain surgery, Mr. Quail believed that he could create a race of superhumans from the mentally ill. Vigilante justice prevailed. They took his ass out and hung him. And that infamous hanging tree is no more than a stone's throw away from where y'all's ass is now seated. The next day, his body was found to be missing. Until today, no trace of Dr. Satan has ever been discovered. But then who knows? Maybe he lives next door to you.
Tour's over, exit through the doors.
Now I want to do my in memoriam to Sid Haig. Sid Haig was born July 14th, 1939, and he passed away September 21st, 2019. He was 80 years old. That's a good long run. So I hope Mr. Haig had a fulfilled life and he felt fulfilled in his life. But in my research of him and his really illustrious long career, it goes back really far. And there are a couple of periods of time in his career that I think are so cool that you should take note. He was a big part of the 70s blaxploitation films with, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, probably, but during the 70s, there was this period of time where there were blaxploitation movies where you had like, well, two I'm fixing to mention, Coffee and Foxy Brown and Dolomite and Superfly and all those kind of movies that were really cool. For that time period, I've seen a bunch of them. Like, oh, and while we're doing this, one of the coolest to me blaxploitation film noir movies that you should check out if you're a horror fan, not only Blackula, but also there's a movie called JD's Revenge that I really, really recently rediscovered. I remember seeing it like in passing as a kid, but I watched it, I guess, about 6 months ago again. Because it's on Amazon Prime if you have that. Again, bitch always watching TV. But check it out. Anyway, so back to Mr. Haig. He was a big part of that movement, and he was always playing the heavy. And that's because he was so tall. He's a tall dude. And it explained a lot for me, because when I heard him speak in his later movies, he sounded like one of my uncles. I was like, is he one of my uncles? He sounded like one of my uncle's friends. His inflection in his voices. And when I found out about the turn into blaxploitation movies in the 70s, I was like, ah, that's where it came from. Very cool. And you know, for most of that career period for him, they always had him playing these heavies, as he's called them, or villains, or whatever. And he was just kind of tired of it. And he was just really, you know, he was like, I'm going to walk away from this if I got to keep playing, you know, being typecast as the heavy. And he pretty much kind of had just kind of quietly kind of retired. And then in 2000, Quentin Tarantino comes around, he's a fan of blaxploitation films, obviously, because he's done a couple or whatever, and it's definitely, you can see the influence in a lot of his work. I'm not gonna dig too deep on Quentin Tarantino. It's something about that dude I do not like. Anyway, fan of a lot of his work, but as a person, like, I don't know. Anyway, when he was casting the judge for the film Jackie Brown, which also starred Pam Grier from those earlier movies, he cast Sid Haig as the judge. And there's a really neat story about, you know, him playing this villain character and her having to battle him so much back in the day. When she walked in to do that scene, she didn't know it was him playing a judge. She literally just burst out laughing, because wait a minute, this dude's playing a judge. But that was a really cute story. And then I think kind of what made him this horror icon that he was in 2000, Rob Zombie came along and cast him as Captain Spaulding, the crazy ass fucking clown, sadistic ass clown that he was in House of a Thousand Corpses. And then again in Devil's Reject. And then again just recently in the final one, Three from Hell. I haven't decided whether I'm going to see Three from Hell. I know. What kind of horror writer are you? And I got to admit, not the hugest fan of Rob Zombie and his work. I remember watching House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil Reject, and I was really kind of like, they're a bloody mess, and I'm for that or whatever. But it's just something about those movies that did nothing fucking for me. I'm just like, yeah, okay. I think I liked them more at the time, because again, it's 2000, 2001, and you change a little bit in your taste. At least mine did. And even at the time, I was kind of like, I don't know. It's just something about, I'm not the hugest Rob Zombie fan. I like his music better. I'm like, go sing. But, you know, people love his point of view, and forget about what I'm saying. Anyway, but Sid Haig, to me, that Captain Spaulding was actually the high points of those movies to me. It was just the delivery of his lines, and, you know, and like I said, he was sadistic and batshit crazy, but I found myself, like, laughing and being entertained by him, you know, and that's a talent to be able to do that. What I found in my research more about him that I think is just cool, and from what I hear from people that met him at the different conventions and stuff and over the years and the other horror fans out there, he seemed to be just a stand-up kind of dude, and in this world we need them. But what was really cool to me is that he donated 10% of all his fees that he got from attending the conventions and his appearances to charity. And that's really cool, because you don't have to do it. And the fact that he went out of his way to do that, I think, sums it up. Stand-up dude, good guy all around. And I haven't heard anybody say a bad thing about him that met him in person. So you gotta applaud a person like that. So I want to say to him, rest in peace. Thank you for Captain Spaulding and just being a good dude. Hope you have a good journey to the hereafter. You guys, we're going to wrap this episode up. Again, I went longer than I intended to. I hear that that's a good thing. I'm lining up another guest. I don't know how you guys felt about Sean Mun Rob. I got listens, but I didn't get any comments. I'd like to know. So help a sister out. Comment, share, pop on the Instagram, pop on the Twitter, pop on the site. Let me know how this is going, whether or not I need to keep doing this. I'm trying to be more vocal. If you're following me on Instagram, you'll know we have a couple of book reports coming up. One's for One More Time for Violet by Kill Creek's author Scott Thomas, and I'm almost done with it, not quite. Again, the real life getting in the way of everything. But this is a really good book. It's I love a ghost story, you guys. Those are my favorite horror movies and books. And he does this really well. So the book is really, really good thus far. And I want to make sure to let you guys know how it ends. So that's coming up. And, you guys, I got the pleasure of getting the new Anointed H.P. Lovecraft Beyond Arkham that was edited in a foreword and notes by Leslie K. Klinger. And the introduction is by Victor LaVille. And it is a gorgeous book. And again, it's H.P. Lovecraft. Come on. All right. And that'll be coming up shortly. So look out for that. I think that's all. Let's see. Next time we'll talk about Into the Dark. The first episode should be aired. And then there's a movie for October that we're going to have a review for. It's called Replace. And it has horror icon S. Barbara Crampton in it. And it is really cool because it's kind of the dangers of plastic surgery. And I was going to insert a Kardashian's joke, but I'm not going to do it. Because, yo, whatever makes you feel good about yourself, who am I to judge? But anyway, I'm going to go and play with this puppy because she is very jealous. She's literally sitting on a couch like, who are you talking to? Pay attention to me. So, until next time, bye, you guys.
Happy Halloween, fellas.
Sup, witches?
Hey.
We should play a board game.
What about this one? Uncanny Annie.
You are now in Annie's box of fun, where you must play along to see the sun.
Annie sounds like a real bitch.
Whoa.
What was that?
That was upstairs.
Where is everyone?
Pure darkness.
This is real. We're in the game.
Is anyone out there?
We have to keep playing.
Maybe if we beat it, then everything goes to normal, like in Jumanji?
Hide, hide, hide before it finds you.
Prankster.
Annie is keeping time.
Tick-tock, tick-tock.
It's my turn.